Happy New Year, everyone. As always, KEI is starting off the new year with Korean American Day. This year, we're focusing on individuals who have made an impact on spreading the Korean wave, or Hallyu, across the United States. In Korean context, we'll spend this month focusing on these figures. Our first guest was first a fan, who then became the preeminent voice in this cultural phenomenon, bringing new fans from across the world to K-pop. After all, before the days of YouTube, K-pop was merely being spread by word of mouth, and it was her that first mobilized the power of the internet to get the Korean wave going across the world. From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yang Kwon, and you're listening to Korean Context. We're joined today by Susan Kang, the founder of Soompi, the original international Korean pop culture online community. Originally a personal GeoCities site, Soompi is today a thrice-acquired Korean entertainment destination for English and Spanish-speaking fans around the world. It's hard to believe that one person started all this. Naturally, Ms. Kang has been described as a Swiss Army knife, having at various points played the role of editor-in-chief, lead developer, event coordinator, fundraiser, and occasional barista. As a result of her labor, Soompi has played a pivotal role in helping K-pop grow into a global phenomenon. And this year, KEI is recognizing her during our Korean American Day celebration. Thank you for coming on Korean Context, and congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
Well, first and foremost, this is something that I've been really curious about. I read that Soompi was a nickname, your nickname during college. What does it mean?
One of my college friends' family had this nickname system where they just add something P to the end of their names. And so her name was Hannah, and so she's Hampy. And they called their mom Mompy. And so since I'm Susan, I became Soompi. But I like to tell people that the real meaning of Soompi is Soom, breath, and P, blood. So it's my breath and blood that created this.
And it's no exaggeration that it was your breath and blood that started Soompi in 1998. Could you set the scene for us? I mean, like, what was it like being a K-pop watcher in the United States in the late 90s? Did you know that there was a large audience for this in the United States? Who were you targeting when you started Soompi Town?
It was really hard to get Korean content back then. Basically, you have Gayo Top 10 on Channel 18 on our local LA Korean TV station. You have the Korean video store where you could get the VHS tapes. And that's pretty much it. And so I didn't have any specific market or demographic in mind. It's just I had met some friends online who also liked this content, and they didn't have access to a Korean video store. I did. And so I would upload music for them. I would scan images and translate parts of articles. And that's how it all started.
So at the very initial stages, this was a very small, tight-knit community. Where were they from? Were they Korean Americans? Were they from across the United States? Were they mostly in California? Did they have any ties to the Korean American community?
I remember there was a young lady in Oregon. She was a Chinese American. And I had one half Korean, half Caucasian friend in Hawaii. And then I had a Korean friend in L.A. She was probably the most connected because she's the one who could actually go to the concerts. But everyone else was kind of scattered around America.
And when did you first get a sense for how much bigger this could be? When did you go from having this very tight-knit community of very personal friends that you met to realizing that you had something much, much larger and something that could attract a larger audience?
I have two parts to that. So the first step really was when I opened the forum. That's when you really started seeing people coming out of the woodwork from all over the place and posting and introducing themselves. But I think the big turning point for me was in 2005. We had what we now affectionately call the Great Crash of 2005, where our entire database got wiped out. And at that point, we had already had millions and millions of posts on the forum. And so at that point, I was at a crossroads. And I had to make the decision, like, I'm married. I have a normal job. Do I really want to continue doing this? Is this really worth doing? Is this really important? Because at that time, I was also paying everything out of pocket, all the server costs, and, you know, it was just a lot of time and effort. But we decided to throw up an empty shell of a forum, and within the first week, we had 40,000 people signed up and registered and actively posting again. And that's when I realized that, hey, this really is more than just me. It's just more than, do I want to do this or not? But it's really filling a need out there for fans to be able to connect with each other. And yeah, people really considered Soompi their home.
What a remarkable turning point. It was a moment when Soompi could have completely disappeared,
yes.
but instead it became
yes.
kind of a rebirth moment.
Mm-hmm.
And now Soompi's, for all intents and purposes, a multinational corporation. And you are its founder. But before, as you mentioned, you were a computer programmer.
Right.
What made you decide that you're going to pursue this full time?
So I actually had a business partner that was my sister's friend in law school. And so my sister would casually mention that her sister had this website called Soompi, and it has, you know, X hundreds of thousands or whatever people coming. And so that friend would always be like, wait, why is your sister just sitting on that? She should do something with it. But, you know, at that time, I was working full-time as a web developer, and I didn't really think that it was possible to actually turn it into anything. So both of us were kind of working nights and weekends on Soompi, and she came with the proposal to, hey, you want to try doing this for reals? And she comes from a very internet startup background. Like, a lot of the members of her family are founders, are like very successful in that business. And she was actually a venture capital attorney at the time. And so she said, hey, move up to San Francisco. Let's try this. And so we're like, hey, why not? Why not? Like, because for me, like, that would be the dream, right? To be able to do Soompi full time and not have it just be this thing on the side that, you know, is constantly stressing me out on top of, you know, my normal job. And I also saw the opportunity because of the passion that I saw of the community that we had. And so, yeah, if there's an opportunity that we could really blow it up into something much better for them, to give them access to much more things.
And this is around 2005.
2007, I believe. And then 2009 is when we both quit our jobs.
Mm.
And we agreed for 1 year to go no salary, go fundraising, hire a developer, another developer, and, you know, just really try to make this
into
a thing.
So 2009, that will be around the time when Big Bang is first kind of making its international presence.
Yes.
But really, outside of Korea and Japan, it's still not a really well-known entity.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as Soompi comes online as this new entity and starts building this audience, I mean, you're engaging with SoftBank. I mean, you're thrice acquired. And so, like, you're engaging with these large e-commerce companies and venture. Did they understand what the K-pop community was like? Did they understand the size of it? I mean, what was your interaction with these commercial entities like?
So for that initial acquisition in 2011, it was with a fellow SoftBank portfolio company. And their interest really was that they had connections to all the different broadcasting networks because they had this really amazing technology where they could fingerprint any video. And so they were making NBC, SBS, all this money by fingerprinting all the pirated content that Koreans were uploading. And so because of these relationships, they saw an opportunity to get into the K-pop market. And so they were actually going to start their own English K-pop website. And then the opportunity came to acquire Soompi. And so it just was a good match at the time.
In terms of expanding globally, Soompi first went to Europe. Is that correct? What was that like? What made you decide that you're going to expand Soompi into the European market?
So there was already a pretty established K-pop fandom in France specifically. And so after Soompi had been acquired by this Korean company, they actually also acquired two French K-pop blogs and transformed those to become Soompi France. And so that was our first foray into international or outside of English K-pop news. So we had Soompi France, and then we opened Soompi Spanish, which just celebrated their 7th year anniversary, which is amazing. But at the end of the day, it was all based on numbers, right? Like, where are these K-pop fans coming from who are coming to Soompi? Not so much from France, because they already had their own French blogs, but a lot of people from Latin America were coming to Soompi. And constantly in the comments, they're like, when are you going to open a Soompi in Spanish? So, yeah, based on the numbers, based on the actual K-pop acts exploring Latin America as well, because they also saw the potential there.
Oh, you mean the actual bands, mm-hmm. the K-pop bands?
Yeah, so like, mm-hmm. for instance, SM and Super Junior in particular were very, very popular there. And so they had tried a couple of concerts there.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
And so what I found really curious, though, is that the market outside of Korea that probably has the largest K-pop following and is the market that Korean bands usually go to after becoming successful in Korea is Japan. But there was never really a Soompi Japan, mm-hmm. was there? Why was that?
So we had actually talked about a Soompi Japan.
When was that? I mean, what year would that
The first been? Time was in 2000 and I want to say 2012.
So
after the acquisition, because there was so much K-pop in Japan, they wanted to do that. And then the second opportunity was when we were acquired, after we were acquired by Viki. They're owned by Rakuten, which
is
the huge, huge conglomerate in Japan. And so then they also were interested in us, you know, having some kind of Japanese presence or being able to leverage all the resources they have in Japan. They have ticketing, they have concerts, they have all these things. Timing just wasn't right, in the resourcing, because we would have to set up an entirely separate operation to open in Japan. Like, it's not really something that we could just translate remotely, especially with how much K-pop was going on the ground. Mm-hmm. And so it was a matter of, you know, do we want to spend these resources on opening up a Soompi Japan versus, I believe we had made the decision to do e-commerce instead. Mm-hmm. And so we had opened up a Soompi shop where we partnered with agencies to provide signed autographed CDs available for sale to the international audience for the first time. And so we were actually the ones who started doing that. And then Yes Asia came and copied, and then CJ came and copied. But we started that. You're welcome.
There is, I guess, in seeing the growth of Soompi, it's riding on this upsurge of interest in K-pop. I mean, I think before that, there was a Rain made a very small entryway into the United States. But then it receded, and I think it's around 2009, 2010, we still start having this explosive growth of K-pop throughout the world, outside of Southeast Asia, outside of just Korea and Japan. It starts to really expand. So naturally, Soompi rides on that wave. But at the same time, Soompi is also, as we said earlier, bringing new audiences into K-pop. When you think about Soompi's role during those years, were you a surfer of the Korean wave, or are you bringing the water to the desert of the world?
That's a great question. It was a little bit of both, right? Because for us, we just wanted to bring the goodness of K-pop to anyone and everyone out there, right? And so English was, for us, I mean, because we're English speakers, that was the easiest way, but also just so much of the world does speak English. We had explored opportunities, say, like in Indonesia, where there's just like K-pop is mainstream there, right? In Southeast Asia in general. And we've had so many requests to have a Soompi, like, in Bahasa. But yeah, I think a lot of it is also just weighing the what is going to be the return on this. Which, I mean, we have so much emphasis on the fans and wanting to create things for the fans, but at the end of the day, it's still a business, right? And so that was a constant challenge for us, trying to balance the, hey, we need to figure out to become a sustainable and profitable business while also creating this fantastic content and events and services for our users and, you know, trying to reach these new markets. So.
And in terms of creating fantastic content that's, like, very immersive for the audiences, I think the one that really comes to my mind is the Rising Legends project.
Mm-hmm.
What's the inspiration behind that? I mean, there's nothing really like it elsewhere. I don't think there's any other fandom out there that quite allows people to participate, really, mm-hmm. in the cultural phenomenon itself,
mm-hmm.
rather than just imitating it to be really part of it. What was the inspiration behind that?
So Rising Legends actually was the evolution of an existing event that we had called the Soompi Eoljang contest. And so that's a yearly fan-led event that we had. And I don't know if your listeners know what Eoljang means, but basically it means best face. And so it was a huge trend in Korea back in the early 2000s where people would become celebrities just based on the photos that they posted of themselves online. Very heavily edited, very heavily angled photos. But yeah, bona fide celebrities came out of there. And so, you know, of course, Soompiers also hopped on this trend and, you know, they wanted to be Eoljangs as well. And so we would have this yearly fan-voted competition and we were able to partner with talent agencies in Korea for that event. Mm-hmm. But as the concept of Eoljang kind of fell out of favor and people are like, oh, that's so shallow. Like, why do you have that? We had the opportunity to rebrand it into a talent competition. And so, yeah, we had singing, dancing, and rapping categories. We were fortunate to partner with JYP the first year, with Cube Entertainment the second year. And yeah, I think part of the magic of Soompi is finding ways to connect fans closer to the artists. And right. What more closer way is there to be with artists than like actually being on stage with them, right? And so it was really a project that was dreamt up by one of our very, very creative staff. Shout out to Jenny Zah. Actually, I want to just take a moment also to talk about the Soompi staff who really, really, really are extraordinary. Like throughout the years, I've been so fortunate to have been able to work with very talented, very passionate, very committed individuals through various seasons of Soompi. So, I mean, I don't want it to sound for a second like, oh, this is a one-person show, I did it all. Like, maybe for the first X years, that was the case. But even through now, there's just so many extraordinary people who really take a deep sense of ownership and just want to always try new things and try to go bigger. And so I think Rising Legends was birthed out of that desire to, you know, let's do something outrageous for the fans, or, yeah, we'll put Soompi on the map in this new and bigger way.
I found it really interesting that you mentioned that one of the original inspirations came from Korea. Mm-hmm. So Soompi, as much as it is a multinational community of people, it's also kind of a line back to Korea as well. As you watched K-pop and Korean culture become well known throughout the world, not just music and not just K-drama, which is so well covered in Soompi, but also K-beauty, Korean food, I think kimchi and Korean barbecue was almost not known in the 90s, but now it's ubiquitous in the United States. So as you watch these things grow, how do you feel as a Korean-American? And what do you think about the role of K-pop in the United States between when you started Soompi and where you are now?
I mean, the short answer is I'm so proud. Like, I'm so proud. And I can't believe that I could go to Trader Joe's and get kimchi fried rice. I think the great thing about K-pop is that that's usually just the entry point. And it's a very easy entry point, especially now with YouTube and with social media. Like, you could randomly get exposed to a K-pop music video and you're like, what is this? And then it autoplays to the next and you're like, what is this? But then you get sucked in the rabbit hole, right? And then you get introduced to dramas and you get introduced to the food. And, oh, wow, this K-beauty thing, which I see not just at Sephora, but like at CVS and Walgreens and Target, like it's everywhere, right? And so it's really amazing and interconnected, really, because especially with K-pop, like you get the beauty in there, you get the fashion in there, you get the acting in there. A lot of these K-pop stars are also actors. And so then, oh, I'm a fan of this person. So then now I'm going to watch this drama. Oh, my goodness. What is this concept of drama? Like, this is amazing. Now I'm going to spend the rest of my life watching all these dramas that I missed out on. And so and then, oh, well, I want to be able to understand it better. I want to understand the lyrics better. So now I'm going to learn Korean. Well, I have summer vacation. Okay, we're going to Korea. Like, I think just this whole cycle or almost like a lifestyle that's emerged from it is just so cool to see as a Korean American, and something that I would have never imagined 20 years ago or even 10 years ago.
And as you mentioned, K-pop is such a an easy and natural gateway into learning more about Korea and the Korean culture. And we have seen that in the United States with, as we mentioned, the growth of food, as you mentioned, kimchi fried rice and Trader Joe's, the Korean movies getting more of a playtime in American theaters, and Korean language and Korean studies becoming more of a popular discipline in universities. So the big question here is, what do you think the next big thing is in this Korean wave?
Oh,
in your mind, man. in your view, in your expert perspective, what is the next big thing?
Outside of what's already?
Is it the deepening of, is it more bands coming out? Is it a whole new thing? Is it Korean novels?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, webtoons have been a big thing for a long time, right? And they've created a lot of dramas from them with mixed success. There can be the potential for even, say, animation from some of these series. But definitely there's a lot of room for growth beyond just the few bands that people might know of today. There's just a lot of talented acts out there. I don't know if there's room for this, but I'm actually personally a big fan of Korean hip-hop. Of course, there's a hope that there's some potential there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Seotaeji and the Boys started a great tradition, and I hope that it is more well-known outside South Korea as well. Now, as K-pop grew into a global phenomenon, I think there has been also a corresponding discussion about some of the challenges within the industry. Mm. For example, the very severe contract between the entertainment studios and some of the contracted bands. And there seems to be a little bit of a fracturing of what K-pop used to be, which is just very studio-driven. Where do you hope to see K-pop go in the next 10, 20 years?
Oh, such a deep question. I think, especially as there's the rise of all these more singer-songwriters, even within the K-pop groups, I think and hope that there'll be a lot more, not just honest, but awareness in the lyrics. I think there's already a lot of it going on. But yeah, like you said, before it was very much a package, like these are the X number of songwriters that basically write all your hits ever, right? And so it's very much a package. But I think already it has been evolving. I think there's a lot more freedom for the artists, even within these groups, to express themselves and to touch on some of these more controversial topics. Even the way that they interact with fans or the way that they present themselves, it's night and day compared to even 5 years ago, where every word, every action was monitored by the agencies and controlled by the agencies. But now on social media, there's a lot more freedom, which of course then sometimes has some consequences as well. But I think in general, hopefully people are able to see a little bit more of a real side to these people as humans, and hopefully the agencies will also kind of loosen up a little bit on them. It is a very, very strict, controlled process that has resulted in, you know, some really, really unfortunate results. So yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of room to grow.
And hopefully we'll see that in the next 20 years when Soompi celebrates his 40th anniversary.
Oh my goodness. So,
and on that point, my final question is, you've recently retired from Soompi, but where do you hope to see Soompi go in the next 10, 20 years?
I'm so proud of what it has been and what it's become, and I'm fully confident that it's going to continue along this really positive trajectory. I would love to see it be able to create a lot more meaningful content with the artists themselves. I would love for them to be able to provide a lot more opportunities for the fans to interact with and even elevate into artists. I would love for it to really kind of go back to its roots in being a home away from home for a lot of, especially just young people who may feel disconnected from the world that's around them, or, you know, they feel like they don't have anyone to talk to. Traditionally, Soompi has been a home for those people, including myself, right? Where it's like, hey, this is a safe place where I know that people will accept me as I am. They love the same things that I do. I learn from them. They learn from me. And it becomes this like real community, again, beyond just K-pop and beyond music. I feel like, and I know this is a concern probably with many people, but just social media itself has really, I feel like, put people in this weird bubble where they're constantly interacting with people but don't feel known. And so, yeah, if Soompi can really be a place where those real connections can happen again, that would be amazing.
That's it for the episode today. Many thanks to Susan Kang and to you, listeners, for tuning in. Next week, we will meet with Korean-Americans who helped introduce K-beauty to the U.S. market. If you have any comments or questions, send us a tweet at KoreaEconist. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to visit our Facebook page, where you can stream our events live and tune in for Korea This Week every Monday at 2 p.m. when we review the most important developments on the peninsula. See you there!